Welcome to Information Security Magazine's Ping interview from May. I'm Mike Mimoso, editor of Information Security, and this month I spoke to Michael Barrett, CISO at PayPal. Barrett talks about how he defends the most spoofed brand on the internet from a constant barrage of phishing attacks. I start off with a question about his role at PayPal and how he protects a customer base of 133 million.
Most CISOs, I wear two hats. One hat is the protecting the interior, so making sure that all of the boring stuff, like we have exactly the right set of access controls in place and people have the permissions they need to do their job and no more. Making sure that we're PCI compliant and compliant with all of the other sort of relevant things. So that's, you know, I do nothing different there than what any other CISO in a financial services company does. Good stuff, you have to do it. It's a necessary evil is probably the best way of putting it. The other hat that I wear is around ensuring that our consumers are appropriately protected, that basically our customer base has the right level of protection. And there I think I probably am unusual from most CISOs in the sense that we have 133 million online customers, which is kind of a larger online population base than most companies have to deal with, as well as because of that depth of customer base and the fact that our whole business is around online financial payments, it means that we and our customers are a high-profile target for phishing attacks and various other nefarious activities. And so we've been doing a lot of work in terms of how do we change that dynamic for the industry? Because we do believe it's an industry problem. We've heard from our customers that, you know, they're concerned about it. And so, even though for the vast majority of people the internet is a safe place, we feel it's appropriate for us to help lead the industry on helping solve that. So I guess the first thing is, I said the internet's a safe place for our customers. If they ever do get compromised, essentially we refund them. So they're 100% refunded. So that the consumer is not out of pocket if they actually ever do get successfully phished. That doesn't make the experience pleasant. So it's like your house being burgled. You feel kind of sullied in the process. It's the same process. If you get victimized online. So we have a number of layers of defense against phishing that we're working on, and some of these are sort of things we're thinking about, some of them they are things that we're actively doing already, some of them are sort of halfway between, and so what I'd like to do is lay that story out, and then if you like we can dive down into pieces of them. The first line of defense is very simple. If you think about phishing as a crime, it only works if the phishmail gets into the consumer's email inbox. If it doesn't arrive there in the first place, it's kind of hard to get victimized. And too many people get a lot of phishmail. And the reason is actually because, so I'll talk about the defenses in sort of layers, but one of the back-end defenses we have is a lot of good fraud modeling. It's very advanced. It's resulted in extremely low fraud rates compared to the rest of the financial services industry. And the net effect is the criminals are basically business people. They have financial targets they have to meet. We've got good at detecting things on the back end, so what's their only response? So they generate more phishmail on the front end. And so that's got to the point where they're sending out epidemic levels of phishmail. And customers are reacting, I think, appropriately to that. But so how do you block email coming into, one of 133 million consumers' email inboxes? And the answer is there are technology solutions that are out there. So for at least a couple of years, the industry has been talking about email signing, but not much had apparently happened. We had a sort of standards bifurcation argument with, one camp going with sender policy framework or SPF, another camp going with domain keys, and maybe in the long term there's convergence. Our view is we're completely standards agnostic. We simply want to do something that works. And so at the moment, we are already, and so this is, we've already done this piece, we're already 100% signing all PayPal outbound email and all eBay outbound email with both SPF and with domain keys. the difficulty is, for an average consumer, it's incredibly hard to look at an email signature in the header and figure out if that's legitimate or not. So rather than forcing the consumers to do that using today's technology, what we're trying to do is two things. One is work with the major ISPs, because if you look at the ISP coverage of customers, there are about a half dozen ISPs, which between them account for about 50% of the world's email. And they're all the usual suspects. They're Yahoo, MSN Hotmail, AOL, Gmail, and so on. And essentially, what we're doing is working with them to say, look, you have our full permission. If a piece of email comes in your front door and it purports to originate from us, but it isn't signed by us, just drop it. Throw it on the floor. We don't want our customers seeing it. So that, you know, once we get that implemented, and it's going to take some period of time to do that, but we are actively working on those relationships with the ISPs. Once we get that implemented, that then covers 50% of the customers. The other 50%, the difficulty is there's hundreds of ISPs and they're all below 1%. So once you get past that top half dozen, you're already below 1%. So the strategy there is instead to work with the tool vendors and the email clients to basically make it much more obvious, yes, this email is legitimately signed versus this one isn't. So that way a consumer can very easily discriminate between the legitimate stuff and the fishmail, as well as we already have a tool in place which we like to tell people about, which is you can already send email that you're not sure about to, you just forward it to spoof@paypal.com, and we respond within a few minutes and say either yes, it's legitimate, or no, it's fraudulent, and just delete it. And that channel, we already get quite a lot of email in, but you know, we always encourage people to use it because it's a great way of finding out if you're not sure. But it kind of ties into the next theme, which is consumer education. So let's just suppose that the consumer actually does get a piece of fishmail in their email inbox. The next question is, okay, what do I do with this? We think there are a couple of really simple messages here. One is, be very careful about clicking links in emails. I like to say never click in links in emails, but the fact is, in industry, we're not quite there yet. But definitely be very careful about it. So if it's an email you weren't expecting, probably, you know, be very careful, not just be careful, be very careful. If on the other hand you called the customer service number for your bank and said, I'm having this problem, and then 30 minutes later you get an email from them that says, thank you for your recent customer service call, click here to get more information about your case, it's like, that's probably legitimate. And so it's like, you know, use common sense about this. But then the other message is, if you actually do anything from an e-commerce perspective, always start up a new browser and just cut the link and paste it, don't actually click it directly. And if you follow those two tips, it's very hard to get victimized. The trick is, with over 100 million customers, it's a difficult educational campaign to reach all 100 million. We do a lot of customer outreach, so this week is National Consumer Protection Week, and we're working with the FTC on helping with that messaging, but nonetheless, it's still hard to reach that many people. The next layer of defense is safe browsing, which is essentially trying to get consumers, and this is partly one of these things where over time this happens anyway. As new browsers come out, most consumers start adopting them. It's just a question of how long it takes. And most consumers start adopting new operating systems again. But there's a very long tail on the curve, and so what we're trying to do is ensure that the new technology is good and safe to use. And indeed, IE 7 is a huge improvement over previous versions from a security perspective. Upcoming versions of Firefox will have some other features, and there's a couple of things. So IE 7 is a good example of where the browser platform seems to be going. One is the support for EV certificates, and those are just a form of SSL certificate. The only difference is you have to go through this very thorough inspection process before the CA. Right. So, and you know, it took like 3 weeks for PayPal to go through that process. So it's a seriously non-trivial amount of work in terms of digging up the articles of planning corporation, getting an officer of the company to sign the request, listing out who's actually authorized to issue the certificates and so on. It's a very detailed process. And it's pretty effective at ensuring that only legitimate companies that really have been in business for a certain period of time and that have got a strong paper trail can do this. So it's very hard for a fly-by-night operator to get one. And essentially the message here is, you know, we have already enabled PayPal.com to support EV certificates. So for any browsers of for any users of IE7 currently and other browsers going forwards, they'll be able to see that it's PayPal.com when they go there, because they'll be able to see the green glow in the address bar, and they'll see our name oscillating between us and VeriSign, who's our CA. The other nice thing about Internet Explorer 7 is it's got a very good phishing detection system built in. It's not perfect, and nobody would claim it is, but it is very effective, and it's quite good at catching both blacklisted known phishing sites, as well as it's got a fairly good heuristic set of tools in there that are capable of spotting likely looking phishing sites. And if you get taken to a phishing site that trips that because you clicked on the link, it really makes it pretty clear. You know, the address bar goes red. There's a big red warning at the top that says, warning, you have arrived at a known phishing site. No, don't do this. You can get to it if you really insist on it, but you've got to be pretty determined that, yeah, I want to give up my information, because it's in your face. It isn't just a window hovering over it. It's kind of a whole big warning window. The next thing we're doing is around authentication, where what we're doing is we're launching the PayPal security key. That's part of the VeriSign VIP network, and so it can be used on other institutions, like it can be used on Yahoo, it can be used on Schwab and so on. So any other member of the network, it can be used there. Essentially, the PayPal security key is just sort of a pretty straightforward one-time password generator. You press the button, and it just generates a six-digit PIN that's good for sort of 60 seconds or something like that. And that program, we've been piloting it internally for the last few months. We're now, next week, opening it up for public beta, as it were, mm-hmm. within the U.S., Australia, and Germany.
Yeah. Is that for all customers?
That's for any
high
customer.
Value?
No, that's for any customer that wants it. What we're doing is, it's going to be free for business customers, and it will very likely be free, although we haven't decided this yet. So because it's a beta program, we're still experimenting with exactly the shape that the program's going to take. It will very likely be free for account takeover victims. So if somebody calls and says, just been victimized, we'll probably just almost certainly just mail them one, so I can start using this. For anybody who isn't in those categories, there's a nominal handling fee. It's $5. Our view is, I mean, A, that doesn't even defray our cost of the tokens, because frankly they're more expensive than that. It's just a nominal shipping and handling charge. But also, the other part of this is, if it costs you $5, you'll probably take care of it and you won't lose it. Whereas if it's free, it's not enough. They'll give me another one if I lose. It's a physical token. Yeah, I'll show you one in a minute. So that's the next layer of defense. And we don't expect everybody to take that up. But we do think that it is important for those customers that care about security and are concerned about it to actually offer them the facility to do that. The next line of defense is essentially the fraud models. Now, we talk about this a lot in terms of, we have advanced fraud models that essentially leave us in a place where we have relatively low fraud compared with other credit card companies and so on. And as usual, we're continuing to evolve those so that we can get better at detecting the fraud that does go on. We catch a lot of it already, but it's like, you know, you just need to keep driving it down. And then the final piece of the puzzle is essentially working with law enforcement globally to ensure that when we find bad guys, we investigate the cases, build up a dossier of kind of all of the known cases where they've victimized people and where money has been lost, and then hand that dossier over to the law enforcement and prosecutors in any given jurisdiction for them to go arrest the guy and get them prosecuted and in jail, because our view is, We have a great deal of grudging professional admiration for the level of intelligence and diligence of our adversary. We want to see them wearing orange jumpsuits and handcuffs.
Sure.
And so that's kind of, you know, there isn't a magic bullet here. There's no single solution you can point to and say, that will solve phishing. But if you have a sort of integrated broad-spectrum strategy like that, we believe that over time it absolutely is going to make an impact on it. So that's kind of, like I said, that's the strategy laid out at a high level.
Brand protection. I mean, you mentioned you have 130 million
right.
customers,
right.
whatever the number was. Obviously, it hasn't hurt your brand that much that you guys are probably the most spoofed brand on the internet. Why is that happening? What's working? I mean, you have to have a certain level of trust with your customers that they keep coming back.
So it's a very interesting question. I think there's a couple of things that are significant. One is, we do, I think, have a unique value proposition for consumers, and that is it enables you to shop on the internet and not worry about whether a particular merchant website gets hacked. I mean, the fact is some merchants do get compromised.
Right.
You know, as an industry, we'd love it if that never happened and no merchant website ever got compromised. The fact is it does happen, and, you know, it's kind of the state of evolution of the industry as it stands today. But if, as a PayPal customer, you've used merchant XYZ and they get hacked up, your information is in no way compromised if you've used PayPal. So that's the shop without sharing message is a really key part of our overall value proposition to consumers, and it is one reason why they trust us. I think another reason is simply because we have historically done a lot about these kinds of electronic crimes and continue to raise the bar. And, you know, the strategy I just laid out is a good example of how we're intending to take a leadership position and respond to that. And consumers know it when you actually go out and say, hey, this is what we're doing. And we've, again, been pretty upfront about that historically.
What can you tell me about your fraud models? Any best practices there? Or, I mean,
They're internally developed. We don't talk a lot about what they do just because, honestly, this is one of these areas where the more you disclose exactly what they're looking for, the more you're telling the bad guy how to evade them. But suffice it to say, they're broad-based, they're both real-time on the front-end as well as back-end inspection models. They look at a whole number of variables around essentially behavioral patterns to determine whether or not essentially the customer is who they say they are attempting to do the transaction that they're attempting to do. And there's a lot of good stuff in there that is, like I say, I think the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And in this case, our fraud rate is 41 basis points or less than 0.5%. That is substantially lower than the fraud rate of, if you go talk to, you know, any credit card company, their fraud rates are significantly in excess of that. So I think that's the, you know, that's what proves it, is the fact that those models are so good at driving actual fraud numbers down.
The high assurance certificates.
Right.
EV, now they've been renamed.
Yeah.
I mean, people in the industry, they understand the phishing bar, they understand the vetting process behind
it. Right.
How much work is incumbent on you to educate consumers? I mean, I think of my mother or the rest of my family.
Right.
They don't know what a certificate is. Yeah. They don't, you know, okay, yeah, big deal, it's flashing red. What does that mean?
Yeah, right. If there is a single piece of this whole strategy that I laid out is hard to achieve, it's very difficult to communicate effectively with 133 million people. And that's the difficulty. It's kind of like, okay, let's get the messaging just right so that for the folks who are more technically inclined, you can really explain how it all works. For the folks who are less technically inclined but want to know they're safe, you can give them the basics of what they need to know. And, you know, I wouldn't say we've done a perfect job there. I don't think anybody's done a perfect job. I think it's hard to do more than we've already done, but we are trying to raise the bar. Simply because it's so difficult to reach 133 million people. But that is nonetheless what we're trying to do, is get to as many of them as we can.